Frank Rich is on the line with us from New York. And Frank Rich, for many years, wrote the political column in the New York Times that was so useful and helpful during the Bush years. And political pundit. He also produces, he is a producer on Veep, the HBO series with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And I imagine he's a political advisor on that, but we'll find out more what he has to do with that. And as we talk with Frank Rich, on the line with us right now, aren't you, Frank?
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Yourself?
Very good, thanks. Good week.
Yeah. Are you having post-electum?
No, I mean, it's kind of seems unreal, really, because at least from my point of view, the results were so uniformly good. even the one bit of, I guess you could call it bad news, that Michelle Bachmann squeaked back in, it's good to have her around as a reality check on that party.
Have you ever chatted with Michelle Bachmann, you know, one-on-one? Or
no, have you?
No. Well, she is in Minnesota. It's a possibility, but, you know.
Yeah, it's something to dream about, hope for. It.
And, of course, what an exciting result, you know, after all the tumult and all the fervor that actually Julia Louis-Dreyfus actually won the Emmy for Veep.
Oh, yeah, she actually did win the Emmy, and now our plan is to make her vice president. And I guess the question is whether Biden will step down early to run for president so that she can slide in there.
Yeah, I noticed that Joe Biden showed up on Parks and Rec, so.
I know. I don't think he's going to show up on our show, but of course, in Veep, there's no one has any political party. So, I mean, it's built on the assumption that everyone screws everything up, and so it doesn't matter who's really in power.
Now, on that, we can get back to politics in general, but this is sort of more interesting, I think, is the, you know, the HBO version of politics. It seems like everything that, and I mean, she is over the top and hilarious, actually.
She is.
But all the stuff that goes on between her aides and the infighting in the office there seems very authentic. Is that where you come in on this production?
Well, actually, not necessarily. Although I obviously know a lot about Washington and grew up there, as by the way did Julia.
Oh.
My being a producer of the show involves everything from looking at scripts and dailies and casting and hanging out on the set and all of that, and so we actually hire a couple of young people in Washington now to make sure that we don't screw up on authenticity. But
but
essentially,
you didn't have to put up money for it, did you? Frank?
No.
Okay.
No.
I what kind of producer?
Former theater critic. I know very well you have to be insane to put money in any show business. Enterprise. What's the line from the producers? Never put your own money in the play.
Right.
No, producing in television isn't like producing in the theater. It's more like being an editor and a part of a collaborative team putting on a show with a lot of people involved. And we're about to get going again for the second season. We start shooting right after Thanksgiving. So
yeah, and it's so apropos because that thing with the tears, where she broke down in tears.
Absolutely.
We have that clip here, actually, if I could set it up for a second. I just thought we should get a hint of what she sounds like on this show, in case people haven't
please.
Heard.
Please, yeah, please.
This is, she's supposed to endorse this congressman. Is a congressman, is he running for governor?
He's running for governor,
He's
yes.
running for governor. And she's
Ohio, in fact.
And she's supposed to endorse him, but she's suddenly toxic from a few mistakes she has made. And so he doesn't want the endorsement, but she's there. It's all set up, and there's a big press thing and all this stuff, and it's supposed to be an endorsement, but he doesn't want the endorsement. And he tells her that in this meeting, and she it's the tear episode.
It is.
And it completely changes the political landscape as a result of tears, and that's this clip here.
You know, Roger, do you sometimes think about, I give you this, and you give me that, and black is up, but brown is down now. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in life, or even just with love, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, aren't we just all finally just, you know, people?
Yeah, true words, ma'am.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I haven't seen my daughter in, like, 3 months. And Ted is just, you know, I don't know where he went, you know. You know, and I would, I, I would love to go to that party, you know? I would like to be everywhere.
Miss President, I'm sorry. But this doesn't give me any pleasure.
Don't you say it gives you no pleasure? When anybody ever says that, all they mean is that it does give them so much pleasure.
Look,
I know what that means.
Maybe you should make an address, okay? You did talk about politics in America, working together.
People. I know how to give a mother speech. Don't you patronize me with your no jaw, you congressman. No jaw!
Okay. We have to go. Okay.
Get the f*** out.
Okay. Okay.
He was just not a nice man. We'll get you some tea, okay? Give you some tea. I'll just leave Mike. He can stand here with you.
That's her unctuous aide.
Yes. You know, I've seen this scene a thousand times, including when we were shooting it.
Yeah. It's brilliant. She's brilliant.
And I'm amazed at her because to produce those tears and produce that like on the spot, you know.
Yeah.
And over again for different angles and different shots and so on. But yeah, that's in some ways it's the, you know, the duplicity, the hypocrisy, that who can get an angle on someone else better. That is the essence of the show. And having, forget about my career as a journalist, just having grown up in Washington and been around it, not from a political family, but in the city and with a stepfather who was what we'd now call a K Street lawyer, I think. It was. It really captures it. It's funny, but it's an unglamorous view of Washington. And you know, the offices look shabby. The people are not well dressed. It's much closer to the way Washington really is than as it's usually presented by Hollywood.
And the underlings are always moving their desks around.
They're fighting over who can, you know, get an outlet to plug in their BlackBerry. and their staff, they're all conniving against each other. They're all looking to see whether there's a better job on the horizon. You know, it's a wonderful cast. A lot of them come from improvisational comedy like UCB and Second City. And I should say that, you know, the showrunner, the person who conceived the show and wrote it, is actually British. It's a guy named Armando Iannucci, who some people may know because he's done a brilliant series on the BBC for years called The Thick of It, parodying the British government. He also did what I think is the best movie about the run-up to about the war in Iraq, really, called In the Loop.
Yeah, I saw it. That's great.
And that's what gave us the idea that he could do Washington, because that was set in London and Washington. And he's a political junkie. He sits around reading Bob Caro books and really gets it, even though he lives in London.
Yeah. And then we talk about, like, in actual politics now, Obama's been doing this tear thing, doing this crying thing. And I'm wondering if he'll have the same. Now, for her, the character, for the Veep, in Veep, it changed her political fortune. She was no longer toxic once people saw that, you know, they're sympathetic and empathetic. It changed everything around for her. But what's with the Obama in tears thing?
He's a guy who tends to be cold, as many people have said, and I think I have to assume it was genuine. And since the election had already taken place, and he's not running again for anything, I think we can assume it was sincere and heartfelt. And look, this was a brilliant campaign. It was underestimated not just by the Republicans, but by many in the press. Even though Nate Silver's polling numbers showed that Obama was ahead really the whole time, and he was apparently. No one wanted to believe it, and so he's really crossed some barrier here and is in a very good position to spend some political capital.
Yeah, but it was almost nostalgic. And actually, that's what I thought when he was here in Madison, too. He was giving a speech, and obviously he was exhausted, and he gave a very good speech and everything, but in the beginning it was almost like nostalgic. You know, he was almost like going through everything that happened and the last time around, this is not the last time, this is this time, you know, and thanking all the people. It was almost like saying goodbye, and it was still in the heat of the campaign.
I think that's a really good point, because, look, this is a guy who's young, for one thing. I mean, he's, what, 51 now. He's had this really meteoric career. It is incredible that not very long ago he was sitting in the state legislature in Illinois and became president of the United States, and a historic one at that. And now it's really, you know, happening fast. I mean, he has something to be nostalgic about, because he'll still be a fairly young guy when he leaves office, and this is it. I mean, maybe he'll have I'm sure he'll have an interesting post-presidency. Maybe he'll campaign in the way Bill Clinton did this time for other candidates. But he probably, looking ahead, realizes that whatever happened in this election, including winning, which he did, he's now in the second half of this, second act.
This fiscal cliff thing, does it bother you as much as it does? I mean,
people
assume there is an actual...
enough already. Let's go back to Petraeus.
Yeah. Find out what's going on there. I'm interested in that, too.
I think they'll make a deal. I think that the Republicans are going to have to get back to reality and realize they actually lost the election. They don't have all this leverage that they're pretending that they have. And... I think it will be resolved. I think it will be resolved. I'm hoping it will be resolved in a consistent way with what Obama ran on. And Republicans are in a very weakened position. They don't really have many bargaining chips, and they don't want to look like obstructionists now after this election. I think the public's had enough of it.
But, you know, to me, it's like, you know, WMDs.
Mm-hmm.
The people talked about it so much they thought they actually existed. They assume they existed because they were talking about them. So, that, you know, to me, it's like, use a term like fiscal cliff. People think there is an actual, if not physical, a fiscal cliff. You know, there is metaphorical, a pretty good metaphor. It's actually there. There's a fiscal cliff, and we're inching towards it now.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's overwrought. It's you almost feel it was made up by someone like Frank Luntz. You know,
it's
consultant or someone made it up.
The axis of cliff.
Yeah, and it's just not the case. And indeed, in general, the hysteria over the budget and the deficit has been wildly over the top, pushed there by everyone who doesn't want to talk about the fact that people need jobs and that unemployment remains a much more pressing issue than this. But and you know what's going to happen? It's going to be an anticlimax.
Yeah.
It's going to be settled, and then we'll go on to the next term of art, whatever it may be.
An anti-cliffmax.
Yes.
I remember the guys in the House said they were talking about this during the election at some point. They said, if Romney gets in, we'll pull that business out immediately. You know, it's not even going to be there.
Right. Exactly. And so, it's an interesting time. I think that Obama. Second terms tend to be difficult for all presidents, but I think Obama is in a good position to make something of his because there's a lot of work to be done and beyond the so-called fiscal cliff. And I'm hoping that he'll seize the moment because I think he does have a moment here.
Yeah. Didn't you think, too, this was sort of like a loss for big money? I thought that was the most encouraging thing about it. I mean, all the tens of millions of dollars that poured into Wisconsin politics by outside groups and so forth trying to affect it. And they lost. That's rather amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. It really is amazing. And, you know, and to see Karl Rove, who was responsible for the spending a lot of that money through his various American Crossroads PACs, come up so short, you know, you feel that... David Letterman had a great line last week. You know, don't be surprised if you read that the Koch brothers have beaten Karl Rove up because the money was so wasted, which doesn't solve the root problem. And I think one thing we have to remember, and this is something I read about in my new piece at New York Magazine, 48% did vote for a candidate who was propped up by money and who was really... I feel a nothing. I think even most Republicans in their heart of hearts felt he was a nothing, which is why 2/3 to 3/4 of Republicans voted against him in the primaries until he finally became the last man standing by default. That this guy, who's sort of a hologram, whose record we never really knew, whose taxes we never saw, whose policy plans had no numbers in them, that this guy got as far as he did is chastening. And we shouldn't... A slicker guy, a slicker liar than Romney, might have been put over by this money. And we also have to remember that the money was countered by money from the other side. Obama had to raise, he and the Democrats outside groups had to and did raise the money to counter it. So there's something off about this system. And while I agree with you it's great that the money didn't pay off for the right this time. It could another time that we have to reform this.
Yeah.
I don't know if we will, but yeah. we should.
Well, I thought we had at one point, didn't we?
Yeah, that yes, gone and forgotten now.
Yeah, and that was the Supreme Court, didn't it? It threw that in the trash, right?
Yeah, well, that's a really great thing about this election, because if there are vacancies on the Supreme Court, as there are likely to be, maybe we can find a court that can reconsider some of these cases.
Okay. All right, now General Petraeus.
Yes.
And, of course, his biography, All In.
Yeah, I know. That's really... I mean, there was... New York Magazine yesterday put up four or five really hilarious versions of what the New York Post headline would be. For those who aren't familiar with the New York Post, it's out on a limb. And actually, they came up with one this morning... I guess I can say, since it's on the front page of a newspaper in New York, that was not thought of by my magazine, but it's pretty, very New York Posty, which was Cloak and Shag Her.
Did they run that?
The Post ran that. No.
Yeah.
We had once, this guy, Dan Amira, who wrote them, hilarious. We had Spy Fall. I can't even remember anymore. We had a couple that I can't say on the air. But anyway,
the Bond thing. You did the Bond thing.
The Bond thing, yeah. But it's a fascinating story. And of course, immediately the right yesterday, when the news started surface, convinced itself this was something to do with a Benghazi cover up. it's kind of a tragic story. I mean, it seems, if I understand it correctly, it's less. You wonder why would he have to resign for having an affair. Wasn't someone who worked for him, or, you know, there's no workplace issue involved.
Yeah.
I guess it involves compromised email and computers, and that you cannot have in someone who's running the intelligence operation in the United States.
It should be between him and Mrs. General Petraeus, I would think.
Yes. And it's sort of shocking. I have to say, it's just when we thought we'd had enough news this week, the news just keeps on giving. I'm ready for a rest from
Well, don't you want to look at 2016?
Oh, God, no.
I don't think anybody does. There may not be a campaign at all in 2016, and we'll just,
find
some other way of running things.
I think people are sick of this election. No matter what side they're on, there was too much. And if you were in states like Wisconsin, this is not a problem we had in New York, so much advertising, so much money poured in. It's revolting. I was in Nevada at the height of the campaign, which had Las Vegas had the single largest number of ads dumped on it of any market in the country. And they were even cutting back, like, the evening news shows to get more commercials jammed in. And it's repellent. It makes you feel like you want to take a bath or shower.
It was really terrible, because on the evening news they dropped all the drug commercials, all the pharmaceuticals, which are geared to people my age, and I no longer knew what I should be taking, and if not for what. They never tell you what it's for, they said, but you know.
No, but they do tell you the potential side effects, which is put the fear of God in anybody.
Right. I love those.
Me too. They always seem to involve 6-hour erections. I don't know.
Are you saying that's unusual?
Well, not for me. I don't know about you.
No, I don't think we'll necessarily go there. But I do like the anti-anxiety drugs that warn if you feel suicidal, discontinue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay then. What else then? You don't want to talk about politics, and we talked about Veep. I don't know where to go from here.
Well,
you know, I will tell you that you almost ruined my life when you quit writing your column at the New York Times. Because it was the only consolation I had for 8 years of George W. Bush administration and all that stuff going on. No one else actually was getting to the heart of it except Frank Rich, you know.
Well, I appreciate it. I was proud of the column, and I think you could understand from my point of view, I'd done that column for, you know, almost 17 years.
No.
I wanted to write longer pieces, and I hope better pieces than, you know, the same
story. No, I don't understand, is what I'm trying to tell you. I don't accept that. I don't understand that.
Oh.
What was wrong with that?
Other things.
And then Barry Blitt was illustrating it most of the time?
The last 2 or 3 years, Barry was with me as a sort of a team, and he's a brilliant, obviously, cartoonist.
He's the best.
For the New Yorker,
yeah.
And the New Yorker gave him dispensation to work with me, and then, you know, when I decided I wanted to do something else, he decided the same, you know, and has done brilliant stuff in the New Yorker and elsewhere since we shut down the column.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, the Times itself was so out of sync with what was going on in the lead up to Iraq and so forth, and actually bought the story, you know, that was going on.
And promoted the story.
Promoted it. It was their worst omission since the Holocaust, I think. They missed the Holocaust, too.
The Holocaust was like on page 22 with the mattress ad.
Yeah. So they did have that, you know, previously. But then it was Iraq was a major. And you were the one guy who was saying, you know, when you, looking at some of these, you look at the aluminum tubes, for example, you know, look at something, you know, and see what really exists, you know.
Yeah, well, look, I was happy to play that role, and that was a very dark period for the Times, which they really have, not that the paper is perfect or any journalistic institution is perfect, but they really, it's too late, unfortunately, to keep us from going to war, but in the aftermath of that disaster, there was a real house cleaning, a change in procedures, and a good thing, too. Now the biggest threat to something as invaluable as Times are less about journalism than about the economics, and we have to hope that that, too, they'll find a fix for.
Yeah. So what's next for Frank Rich now? Are we talking more producer, Frank Rich producer?
I've been involved with HBO going back to when I was at the paper. I've been for like 5 years, and I'm involved with some other stuff there, and although Veep's the first show I've been involved with as a producer. But, you know, also my main thing is writing. I mean, I write, you know, for long pieces for New York Magazine every month about the same things. And
same thing every month, or isn't it? Doesn't that get old?
Not the same thing every month, you know, the same substance, my themes, you know, politics and culture. I have a piece about the election that just went up. It's out in the magazine on Monday, but just went up on at New NY Mag last night, called Fantasy Land, which I think I'm proud of.
What's the gist of that one, Frank?
The gist of that one is,
so you don't have to buy it.
Well, you can read it for free online, but the gist of it is that we're living in a culture where anyone can almost say anything and get away with it, and it traces right back to what we were just talking about. It traces back to the Bush administration convincing Americans that Saddam Hussein had WMD and that the hijackers of 9/11 were Iraqis, which of course none of them were. And it's just gotten worse. And it gets back to my point about Romney, which is he was unusually mendacious, even by the standards of politics. I mean, all politicians do lie. But he got very far. And, you know, a lot of people get far in our culture. Lance Armstrong got far. Joe Paterno got far. The point of the piece, although it's mainly about the election and about the Republicans, is that truth and the facts have been destabilized in America. And we now have truthiness, as Stephen Colbert coined it during the Bush years.
Right.
And what's fascinating about the Republicans is that they're so in denial, so cut off from reality, that they actually did think they were going to win. And their response to any empirical evidence, just as they don't believe that climate change is happening, they don't believe in Keynesian economics, their belief about the polls were they all had to be biased. It couldn't possibly be true. Peggy Noonan wrote a piece the day before the election saying that she counted yard signs in the neighborhood in Florida and she knew Romney was going to win. So we have a major political party. It came back and bit them this time because they drank their own Kool-Aid, but we have a major political party that simply doesn't believe in facts. They have their own polls, and they have their own, view of history and view of and what's going on in the environment and the rest of it. And they're not alone. There's some of that is afoot elsewhere in America in our culture, and I think it's a concern going forward.
Fantasyland.
It's at nymag.com for those who want to look at it. But anyway, to get back to me, you know, so I'm going to keep doing this as I have been for the past year and trying to circle.
Anyway, to get back to me, I like that, Frank. Anyway, to get back to me is a good way to start a sentence.
Exactly. So anyway, that's my story.
It's a good one. Thank you, Frank. Nice talking to you, as always.
Great talking to you, and congratulations to the entire state. What a heroic role played in turning back, including its so-called favorite son.
Thank you, Frank Rich.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, we're heroes. We don't like to admit it.